Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to another Arscast Extra. As always, James from Gunnar Blog. James, good morning to you.
Good morning, Andrew. How are you doing? It's weird. All the football's kind of gone away.
It's gone now. That's it. We're well and truly into summertime now. The nothingness until something happens again. But I'm okay. As you can hear, my voice is a little better than this time last week. I would say that's back true. To 83.64% fitness. Not 100% yet, but getting there.
You've got a whole summer to get to work on that, you know?
That is true. Congratulations to you, first and foremost, to kick today off on winning the Sports Entertainment Book of the Year at the Sunday Times Sports Book Awards. In your fucking face, Enid Blyton. That's what I said.
Yeah, thanks, man. And thank you to everyone who voted, because I think it was at least 50% an audience vote. So you all played your part.
Arsenal online, unbeaten once again.
Strike again. It was very cool. I have to be honest, when I turned up, quite a few of the people in my category, like Phil Tufnell and Sir Jeff Hurst and Clive Tildesley, were in attendance.
Right.
And I thought, that's a bad sign.
Yeah, that's no good.
If you're at that level, I reckon you get tipped off if you're winning one of these things. So I was not confident, shall we say, and not prepared to win, which made it all the more lovely and all the more surprising. Yeah. So, yeah, thank you so much for your votes. It's very, very lovely of you all.
Awesome. And did you have to get up and give a good speech? And
I did. Yeah. I did have to. I was deeply unprepared. I forgot to thank my publishers. It went off without a hitch.
If there's anyone I've forgotten, please excuse me. Only the actual people who
made the book. Yeah. They're quite important generally. Headline. I'll give them a shout out here. Thanks to Headline. And now we're all square.
Now you're even.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
No, it's good fun. And thank you for corralling people into voting. It must have worked.
Well, look, if it helped in some small way, I'm very happy, but it's great reward for, you know, what I've said more than once is a really good book. And of course, people, if they don't know about it, if they want to have a listen back, we did an episode on it where I interviewed you about the book. Mm-hmm. I can't remember which number it is. I should have looked that up before I started. People are listening now. But look, it's there. It's in the archives. If you just Google Arscast Champ Chump.
Yeah, I'm doing it now. 638, episode 638.
There you go. There you go. So people can get an idea of what the book is about. And if you're looking for something this summer to take with you on your holidays when you get away, if you are getting away, then I recommend that.
Paperback's out now.
It's cheaper.
It's smaller. It's more convenient, basically.
Wow, you're ticking all the boxes for everyone. Today.
By the way, that podcast is also on YouTube. Are all our podcasts on YouTube?
Yeah, all of them are on YouTube. They go up in non-video format on YouTube. Maybe we should do a few video ones. I don't quite know. But
For
the YouTube guys. But yeah, they're all on YouTube. We do have a YouTube channel where the podcasts go up.
I probably should have known that before, but I'm not very attentive.
That's okay. It's not something you have to worry about anyway.
No. I just talk. You worry about all the important stuff.
Turn up and talk. It's a good job. You're quite good at it, I suppose.
I guess so,
how was the weekend? Did you watch any of the football goings on at the weekend?
I did. I watched the Championship playoff final. Well, I had half an eye on it.
I didn't watch that, and I'm a bit sad about it because it's usually a really good game. I don't know what it is about that fixture, but it throws up some fucking amazing football.
Well, the stakes are so high, aren't they? It's, you know, They used to call it the £100 million game. I suspect it's probably worth more than that now.
Well, it's probably called the 100 trillion guinea game or whatever it is that it would be called in the UK now, because we're all going back to imperial measurements.
That's true. That's true. It's called the relegated next season game because everyone's got oil money now. It was quite entertaining. I mean, unfortunately, it will be remembered for some poor officiating. You'll be shocked to hear.
I saw the incidents in question. I didn't see the game, but I did see those incidents. I cannot believe that Huddersfield didn't get a penalty for the one, you know, the one where the guy literally trips him up in the box.
Yeah, and the second one. Is that the one in the corner of the box?
No. That was the I don't know what order that happened in. I saw the two, and of the two, the one where the guy just trips him up and he gets booked for diving.
Oh, that one, the first one.
Fuck right, me. Yeah. What the fuck? How does that even happen with VAR? I mean, how? Someone explain it to me. As I was talking to Matt Roxburgh on Twitter this morning, and he said, like, it's either gross incompetence or downright corrupt. And I don't know that you can find any other explanation for that decision.
Yeah. I mean, I just don't get it. I actually think, I don't know how many replays you've seen of the first one, of them each, but I actually think the second one is maybe more egregious.
Wow.
I think it was even more obviously a foul. The first one, there's a sort of odd thing where from some angles, it looks like he's kind of chucked himself over the foot.
Mm.
But there is an angle, which I'm sure is the one you've seen on social media, where it's like, oh, no, he's just gone over his leg, which he's hung out in front of him. I mean, Huddersfield fans, I can't imagine how aggrieved they must feel this morning.
Unbelievable.
But thoughts on Nottingham Forest coming back to the Premier League? That's got a retro feel to it.
It does a bit. How long have they been gone now? A good 20 years or something?
Yeah, I think 17 years, something like that.
Wow, yeah. I mean, Nottingham Forest were obviously a first division team when I was a lad. So, yeah, like, again, to me, it doesn't make any difference.
We owe them something after January in the FA Cup third round. I mean, to be honest, it mainly makes me think, oh, I don't fancy going there because they had a great atmosphere and a decent team. And that was sort of around the start of a really, really good run from them that led to them getting promoted ultimately. They just missed out automatically, but got up by the playoffs.
Yeah, we had a question on the Discord actually from Wolfbane for score predictions for Nottingham Forest away on the first Friday under the lights.
Yeah, 2-0, I would think. 2-0. Scott, Jamie Carragher and Gary Neville celebrating on the for the cameras.
Yeah, dressed, both of them dressed like Robin Hood.
Yeah.
Dancing with the Forest fans live on
that
Sky.
Feels absolutely inevitable.
I mean, great for Forest, obviously, but heartbreaking for Huddersfield to be on the wrong end of those decisions. Like, I'd never let that go. If that happened to Arsenal in a game of that magnitude, imagine we get to a Champions League final, or we get to a game that could decide the Premier League, and that kind of decision went against us. I'd never let it go. It would fester away in the pit of my stomach for eternity. I guarantee you. Jesus.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember who. Was it John Moss?
John Moss and Paul Tierney was on... was on VAR, apparently.
It was John Moss's final match of his career.
Well, I suppose he wanted to go out really. The way he, you know, refereed his career, being useless.
Quite incredible. So I watched that, and then, no, I didn't. There were a couple of other playoff finals, weren't there? But I didn't really catch much other football.
Champions League final?
Oh, forgot about that. Yeah, I did see that. I saw the vast majority of that. The small match of the Champions League final. I mean, sort of incredible, really, that Raul won that game. I mean, I do feel, you know, that sort of cliche of someone's name is on the cup. When you look at the way they've come through this tournament, it really has felt like that.
Did you call them Raul there? Was that what you said?
Raul Madrid. Hopefully not. No, Real. But they were Raul Madrid when he used to play up front for them, I guess.
How do you view, like, a club like Real Madrid and their record in this competition? Someone made a really great point to me over the weekend. Well, maybe so. Someone made a great point to me that they had this incredible history in the tournament. Sorry, I can't find the tweet. But they were front and center in the Super League, you know, and want to basically get rid of this tournament that they've had such incredible history in. It was
completed it, I guess.
I guess maybe that's what it is. It was Jay Alex, who's at Jord AM 1988. But I mean, it is a weird thing to think about, isn't it? That like, how can you have institutional knowledge of how to win a tournament when so many things change? You know, the president changes, the personnel change, the players change, the coaches change, or whether coaches come back every so often and win another one with them. But, you know, it's weird to think that this institution has a record in it. I mean, it could be something as simple as, like, they're a very big club, they buy a lot of good players, and therefore they're always in with a good chance. But, you know, that could be also true of other clubs who don't even come close.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it is kind of incredible. Serial winners in that team, a lot of them. But, you know, it's not a 1-11, maybe, or you'd say the calibre of some Real Madrid teams of the past. No. And yet in this competition, who did they beat? They beat Manchester City. They beat Chelsea.
PSG.
PSG. I mean, and then Liverpool. Quite incredible, really.
Plucky underdogs, Real Madrid taking on the oil money clubs.
And I guess the quick answer on why they seemingly want to destroy a competition that they are most closely associated with is a financial reason, right? It's because they feel that they can get more of a level playing field with the other European clubs via the Super League, because they're essentially trapped in the financial backwater of La Liga.
Oh, no. Trapped with all that UEFA Champions League money.
Hmm. Yeah. As for Carlo Ancelotti, that was kind of incredible. I mean, I think it's 5 now for him. I am the record man, he said.
Oh, did he?
Yeah. Probably with a cigar on at the time.
With one eyebrow raised.
And to think he was at Everton, you know.
I mean, it's
a matter of months ago, whatever it was, a year or so.
How did that happen?
Some guys just land on their feet, I guess.
Football is really weird. I think we all know that football is weird and strange things happen. And like in the cold light of day, do you ever look back on some things that happen in football and you go like, that was really odd. Whatever that transfer was, whatever that player playing there was, whatever turn of events happened. But Carlo Ancelotti being at Everton is genuinely one of the strangest things.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And I also think it's sort of a lesson in how much goes into football. You know, you can put Carlo Ancelotti at Everton, but that doesn't mean Everton will suddenly be good. You know, there's so many component parts. The alchemy of what makes for success is so complex in football. But there's something about Ancelotti at Madrid that seems to work. And to be fair to Ancelotti, I mean, he's had an extraordinary career.
He's quite good, isn't he?
Not bad, yeah. The thing is, I don't think Everton will be kind of near the top of his eventual obituary, you know?
No. Former Everton manager Carlo Ancelotti has passed away today.
I think that will be the penultimate par.
Yeah,
he also weirdly turned up at Everton, but we don't talk about that.
What did you make of some of the stuff that went on, obviously, with the fans and the way that they were... The way that they were treated? It's a weird one, you know, because I remember going to the Champions League final in 2006 and seeing an Arsenal fan impaled on the railings as he had attempted to climb over, and there were paramedics and doctors and ambulances, and they had a blanket around him so you couldn't see what the wound was, but I suspect he required more than a few stitches in one or more sensitive areas.
The magic sponge wasn't going to sort that out.
No. And I think it's always part and parcel of an event like this that there are going to be people who turn up without tickets, who try and get in, or who try and, you know, be part of what should have been an incredible day. But just reading some of the eyewitness testimony and reading some of the reports from fans and journalists who were there, it feels like a very dangerous situation. We're lucky that we weren't talking about something worse, maybe. And having experienced a few European away days with Arsenal in my time, you know, there are pretty much horror stories about the way English football fans are treated in Europe. season after season after season. I don't know if the Real Madrid fans were policed differently. Maybe that's why there weren't any issues at their end. But it looked pretty fucking shambolic. And I think UEFA and the authorities and what have you instantly blaming fans makes me very fucking suspicious, you know?
It does, especially when you read so many eyewitness reports from, and not from Liverpool fans, from journalists who were caught up in the kind of melee. It sounds like a very dangerous situation, and the attempt to kind of politicize or spin it to be about fan behavior is really distasteful to me, especially in the context of it being Liverpool. And given the history there, I think it's pretty cheap and pretty nasty to turn it on their fans. And I'm sure there were fans who misbehaved. I'm sure there were fans who jumped barriers or didn't have tickets. Listen, that, like you say, that happens at every big occasion. I was at the Euro 2020 final and it was absolute chaos. And a lot of that was fan-driven. But it does seem that in this instance, the vast majority of fans were literally just trying to get into a stadium and, you know, forced through various bottlenecks that could have been fatal. I don't think it's an exaggeration to say. And so it's terrible, really. It's an appalling organisation.
Yeah.
But it is the spin that has most sort of irritated me.
And I agree.
I think maybe you wrote this on the blog, but I think as football fans, you know, we should sort of try to stand together at moments like this rather than, you know, pointing fingers at each
other. It's easy to, you know, if you hate Liverpool, fine. If you don't want Liverpool to win the Champions League, fine. I mean, that's perfect. I understand that completely. If you want to laugh at them losing the game, absolutely fine. That's what football rivalry is, and nobody is going to say, well, we should be up for the English club, because, you know, we know that's not the case. But I think with something like this, when, as you say, they're trying to spin it one way, and it's easy to prey or to play on the sense of rivalry, you know, to go like, well, it's typical of Liverpool fans to do this. But like, if you're a football club, whoever you support, if you're away days in Europe or wherever else are whiter than white, maybe you get to criticize or whatever it is, you know, but that's not the case. There's always messers and hijinks and whatever you want to call it, you know, in every fan base. Nobody's pure. People in glass houses and all that kind of stuff, you know? And I do think there is a need for more solidarity over things like this, because it's just typical of what happens, not just in football, but in the world. You know, they blame ordinary people for the things that they did wrong. And I'm talking organizations and governments and however you want to do it. We are getting fucked over time and time and time again. And an easy way to distract people from what the real issue is to divide them, you know, use populism or whatever else you want to call it to divide people over key issues. And then they can argue amongst themselves and we don't have to face the consequences of our actions. And that's what that all feels like to me.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. What did you make of the actual game?
It was all right. Wasn't great. Courtois, I mean, everyone's talking about Benzema, aren't they, you know, with the Champions League this season, but I think Courtois in the last two games has been, you know, unbelievable. There was one great save from Salah, and you think about what he did with the save from Grealish in the semi-final, a couple of saves actually. You know, it was okay. They've tended to be a bit underwhelming, the Champions League finals in recent years.
They have,
you know, apart from when obviously Spurs lost. That was one of the greatest finals of all time. But yeah, I think Liverpool were not at their best. I think it's fair to say they were some way short of their best.
Yeah, I mean, I guess fighting on four fronts will maybe eventually catch up with you.
Yeah.
And we probably saw a bit of that. I have to say, I thought it was interesting. You know, they had a massive parade yesterday, Liverpool. I don't know if you saw any of that. And
I saw a bit this morning on Twitter. Yeah.
And believe it or not, the celebration police were called to the scene.
Did they make any arrests?
I think the entire Liverpool first team squad were arrested, yeah. But I really thought, I have seen some criticism of that, and just in sort of keeping with our one of our themes of the season about the celebration police, I just thought that was so absurd. I mean, granted, they lost the Champions League final and they lost the Premier League by ultimately, what was it, a winning goal essentially on the final day. But they still had an incredible campaign. And I think increasingly in football, it's going to be really important to celebrate the successes that you do have, especially if you're not one of kind of the oil-rich clubs.
Yeah.
So I just find it baffling, that idea. Yeah. And
we sort of talked about it last week, didn't we, on about maybe redefining what success is in the era of these clubs, where it's going to make it very difficult. And Philippe talked about it a bit as well on the
Ozcast on Friday. Actually, guys, yeah. If you have not heard that yet.
And it's like, look, if they want to celebrate and have a party at the end of a season, which promised a lot and maybe didn't quite deliver as much as they would have liked, so fucking what? You don't have to go. Yeah. You're not invited anyway. So, you know, I'm all for it. Fuck it. Like, people should have a good time. Life is short, and people should have a good time whenever they can. So,
mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, look, I thought this might be what we have to do for the next few weeks anyway, as the summer kicks on and not much happens because, you know, people are away on holidays and things like that. Pre-season will obviously bring us back into the grind, and we'll have transfers and all that kind of stuff. But we're probably going to have to do questions in both parts to give us some talking points and what have you. So I'm going to kick off today with one on Twitter from De Norona.
I know the dude.
At De Norona UK. I think that's how you might pronounce it. And he says, to Gnabry or not to Gnabry?
Well, I am very bemused by this transfer rumor, I must say. I don't see why Serge Gnabry would join Arsenal right now. And I've not heard anything to suggest that is going to happen. Now, I've been wrong before, but I am, let's say, I would love Serge Gnabry at Arsenal, but I don't foresee that as a realistic outcome.
Yes, I agree.
Would that be your instinct?
Yeah, I mean, it would be great, wouldn't it? He's fucking brilliant.
Yeah,
it would be.
He's only 26, 27 this summer. He's amazing. You know, it's like the great regret of the past couple of decades that we didn't keep him, that we let him go, and he went on to become a world star. But why would he come to Arsenal? With the greatest of respect, I think he'll have other options.
Preferable options.
Champions League options.
Do you mind if I just pause here for 1 second? Because my dog, Archer's going a bit mad down the back of the garden, and I just need to see what's going on.
Okay,
so just bear with me 1 second. That was my fault.
Was it?
It was. I fed the dogs and feed them separately. And I left Lana inside and Archer outside. I forgot to let him back in. So he was just, you know, giving out to me to let him back in. So I let him back in. I think everything's hunky-dory now. So there we
go. Great news. Great news.
Yeah. So I don't know if we have dog interruption music.
Yeah, I was going to say, is it doorbell music? Because presumably he, as intelligent as he is, he didn't ring the doorbell.
No, he didn't. He did.
Let's think about that.
Yeah. I don't know what to. Maybe I'll just do like a whoosh, whoosh, transition kind of sound.
Nice.
But yeah, we're talking Serge Gnabry. It would be nice, but I would give it like a 0.0001% chance of happening.
Yeah. It reminds me a bit of like, I feel like I took like a week off Twitter and I came back a few months ago and all the Arsenal fans were talking about us signing Erling Haaland. And like, we must get Haaland. If we don't get the top four, will we still get Haaland? And it was like, I was in a dream. And I feel a bit like that with Serge Gnabry. Mm. What I would ask is this. Has anybody credible written about the prospect of Serge Gnabry coming to Arsenal?
I don't think so. I've seen stuff like, Serge Gnabry has turned down contract offer from Bayern Munich, and it feels a bit like two and two being put together here.
I mean, well, you know, it's interesting. I saw Fabrizio Romano reporting yesterday that Sadio Mane will leave Liverpool, for example. And Bayern Munich is one of the mooted destinations for him. I find it much more plausible to imagine Gnabry turning up at Anfield, say, than the Emirates Stadium. But we shall see. But no, that's not one that I'm sort of, you know, keeping tabs on closely.
And can we go mental if he goes to Liverpool?
If he goes to Arsenal, would let him slip through their fingers.
Arsenal
once again
miss out on top transfer. I mean,
Arsenal gazumped.
Are we even interested? I mean, we could be. We should be. I mean, he is a great player, but I just, you know, I just don't see it for all the reasons we've been talking about. So,
yeah.
Shall we do another one?
What about this one?
Okay.
Ola Asmal says, me a few months ago, I bet Nketiah will score a few goals now and they give him a way too expensive contract. Should we not plan something like that beforehand and not give new contracts on a whim? The usual mistakes.
Well, what I would say is that they've wanted Eddie to sign a new contract for a while, right?
Like, oh, they've been very consistent on that.
I mean,
and publicly, I guess. The only difference maybe is obviously the amount of money involved. And, you know, when we did the live pod, we had a question about Eddie's and Bukayo's agent.
Yes.
And, I mean, while an agent can be tricky for a club to deal with, when they get what their clients want, you do a sort of, you know, have to reluctantly applaud it. And in this particular case, I mean, they've played this situation pretty much to perfection.
Well, I mean, maybe the only whim is Eddie, after getting some playing time, being convinced that he might get more playing time. And I think that's probably been part of the negotiations and everything else.
It was really interesting. I hadn't really thought about this, but a few weeks ago, I was chatting to somebody in the industry and they said to me, Eddie's next contract, I can't remember if I said this on here, will be incredibly lucrative wherever he goes. And I think, I don't know if it's true, this 100K figure that we've seen reported, but it wouldn't blow my mind because he had effectively got himself to the point where he was kind of a Bosman, you know, he was kind of a free transfer for some clubs. And I guess if Arsenal wanted him to stay, they would have had to, if not match that, certainly made a very financially compelling offer. And I guess the equation for Arsenal will have been what it costs to keep Eddie in wages over the next 5 years versus what it costs to buy someone like Eddie with the transfer fee plus the wages. And they will probably still have thought there was value in that contract.
Yeah. I mean, that's part of it, I'm sure. Because the £100,000 a week figure, I suspect, is inclusive of whatever signing on fee he got. Like, I would be really, really surprised if Eddie's contract or his basic wage is £100,000 a week. But if you take into account the signing on fee that he would have got at any other club that he went to, plus his basic wage, it comes out at, you know, over the course of his contract worth something in the region of that. But then you talk about, you know, the money that it would take to sign a player. And I don't know who, like, an equivalent sort of signing might be. Who is the guy that Leicester signed and everyone went, oh, we should be signing him?
Patson Daka.
How much did they pay for him?
I wonder. Let's have a look. A decent chunk, a change, 22 million quid.
Right. So
That's a five-year deal.
Yeah, so he got 5 goals in the Premier League last season, 5 in the Europa League and 1 in the Conference League for 11 goals in total. That's basically what Eddie got. 5 in the Premier League. I think he had 5 in the EFL Cup. So that's 10 goals. So there's, you know, an outlay of, and look, I'm not saying these are the same player or, you know,
similar ages.
I'm just talking about that profile of a striker that you're getting in from a club. Where did he play beforehand? He was playing, was it Red Bull?
Salzburg, in Austria, yeah.
So you're buying a striker from the Austrian league for £22 million. You're going to pay him at least that, what you're paying Eddie. So your total outlay is...
It's double, basically.
It's double base, yeah.
Eddie's deal, if it is 100K all in over 5 years, it would cost you about 25 million quid, basically. So yeah, it's half the budgetary allocation to do this deal than it is to buy an equivalent. Now, you know, people may feel Eddie's not good enough, and that's sort of a separate decision, but clearly Arteta and Edu think he is, and have thought that pretty consistently.
Yeah. And the other thing is, now he's gone from having zero value to some kind of transfer value.
That's a big component, surely.
Yeah, exactly.
Because everything we make on Eddie eventually is profit, right? Essentially, because he's an academy player.
Mm.
So giving him a new contract protects all that investment in his development. And, you know, as an English striker from a big club, if and when he does leave the club, you would expect a decent return. And a five-year contract, which is what's been reported, gives the club, you know, a good measure of protection on that front over the next few years. So, I mean, when we spoke last week, I said I had a feeling he would stay. And I'm not too surprised that he has. And I think that, I suppose what it does is it hopefully means that Arsenal have resource to strengthen, you know, to make other additions alongside keeping him.
No doubt those are questions that we'll come to over the course of the next few weeks. I don't want to delve too heavily into the transfer stuff at this point because there's not much new anyway. Still Tielemans, still Gabriel Jesus, and whatever else is going on behind the scenes. But we'll have plenty of time for that one. Here's one from, where is it? Lil Moosey 13 on the Discord. Goodly morning. What do you make of Shad Forsyth leaving? I remember him joining amid a spate of muscular injuries in the Wenger days, and now he leaves after a season also afflicted by many muscular injuries. Is this an area where Arsenal can improve?
Yeah, I mean, some interesting context here is that I saw, who put these numbers out? I think it was Ben Dinnery. Who is an injury analyst. He put out the total number of days that each Premier League team had players absent for.
Right.
At Arsenal's was a total of 583, which was the second best record in the league. Only Crystal Palace had players absent for less time collectively. So I do think that's an important counterpoint sort of to the question. I'm not sure our injury record was as bad as we might feel it was. I think we lost some important players to muscular injuries for long periods. But in general, the health of the squad was pretty good, helped no doubt by a pretty straightforward fixture schedule.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like somebody like Thomas Partey, say, I feel like a couple of years into his time with Arsenal, we can begin to see that he's kind of an exceptional case, that he is someone who, you know, physically is always going to maybe have issues with the Premier League.
Mm.
And it's difficult to lay the blame for that at any one physio's door.
Sure.
I was slightly surprised to see Shad Forsyth go, only because when Mikel Arteta came in, he sort of, you know, made Shad quite prominent within his backroom team. Because there was a time, I don't know if you remember, where like Darren Burgess and Shad Forsyth were at the club together.
Yeah.
And Shad was kind of playing second fiddle there a little bit, I think it's fair to say. And then Darren left and Shad had more control. He worked really closely with Gary O'Driscoll, and they and Mikel have been a really tight unit on the medical side. So I do wonder if this is just a case of change and wanting to stay fresh and bring in different dynamics and, you know, stay at the forefront and keep everybody on their toes. I don't know. I haven't heard anything specific that's made me think, oh, and that's why Shad's contract wasn't renewed and why he had to be shown the door.
Yeah.
My impression, and this is, again, this is me making an informed guess, maybe that it's just about keeping moving forward, bringing some freshness into the group. Because, you know, the majority of the coaching staff are sticking around, and I think it's good to have new voices in that conversation. I don't know, though. Yeah. It's an interesting one.
It is. I mean, I think you could be right there. There's also the idea that, like, when a guy's contract is up and you don't renew it, there is maybe a sense that you're looking for something different or perhaps something better, that you're looking for an improvement. You're looking for, you know, not making casting any aspersions on the work that he's done because, you know, I'm not informed enough anyway. And I do think that there has been, since he arrived, a marked improvement in fitness levels and all that kind of stuff. But it just seems like a natural segue into something else. If you were thinking of it and the guy's contract is up, it's just the easiest time to say goodbye and go in a different direction, you know?
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, he was someone who was there, I guess. I mean, Mikel, I think, knew him. Maybe there was just, there might even have been an overlap when, from his playing days. But, you know, he kind of inherited Shad as a manager. And maybe there's someone he's got in mind who, you know, he's wanted for a while, who's becoming available, someone he's worked with previously. That's the other thing to consider here is who's coming in. And maybe between Mikel and Edu, they have had an idea for some time of someone they want, and now is just the appropriate moment to do it. So it'll be interesting to see the appointment that's made there.
Mm. He joined Arsenal in 2014, so there would have been some overlap when Mikel Arteta was playing. And you know, the last couple of years of Mikel Arteta's playing career were blighted by injury and what have you. So I'm sure he knows him pretty well from having spent time there. So yeah, it'd be interesting to see what happens and who happens, if you like.
Yeah, and football's a funny business. People have contracts there. I mean, that's a good long stint at a club for any member of staff. So I don't think there's anything particularly sort of controversial about parties going their separate ways at this point. If anything, I think probably Shad has done very well to remain in the post, especially through managerial changes. I've got a question.
Okay.
It's from Egbertum on the Discord. And Egbertum says, "Goodly morning, gents. What do you think the plan is for Reece Nelson? He's had a decent loan spell and we'd all like another player for the right wing once Pepe leaves, but is he the guy? If he isn't the guy, I can't see him staying. A spare minutes in the Europa and Carabao." Pardon me.
You all right?
I'll ask that again. "If he isn't the guy, I can't see him staying. A spare minutes in Europa and Carabao will likely go to the new Brazilian kid." And I think we had a similar question on Twitter. Charlie Morrell said, "Goodly morning, gents. What do you think is next for Reece Nelson? Given Pepe's role, could he possibly take that role in the squad?"
Well, that's if we get this Brazilian kid.
Well, that's an interesting one in itself.
Yeah, seeing as he apparently signed a pre-contract agreement with Wolves. Whether or not that is enforceable in English law, I'm not sure.
Well, that is, as I understand it, the situation. A pre-contract in England and Wales, although we see it talked about in the media, does not exist. It's either a contract or it's not. What the vagaries of sort of Brazilian law permit and whether or not that would be upheld by FIFA,
yeah,
I have absolutely no idea. My strong suspicion is this player will end up with Arsenal because ultimately that's what happens, right?
Yeah.
Players decide where they want to go. It's just a question of how much wrangling and how legal it might get before that happens. And I tell you, Arsenal will probably be desperate to avoid that because it will drag and it will be probably as expensive as just sort of, I don't know, even if they chuck some compensation in Wolves' direction, I think,
yeah,
you know, they'll want to just clean this up.
Exactly. We don't need sagas this early in the summer. We've got to prepare ourselves for the proper twists and turns of a transfer saga. And yeah, it strikes me that this is one where probably there's a, you know, an agreement is found between the two clubs for it to go away, unless they see it as a real point of principle. But ultimately, the one who will suffer in that scenario is the player, who might be left in limbo and what have you. So
that rarely happens. Yeah. You know, the players get what they want. I mean, it sounds like, I mean, Wolves, from what I understand, Wolves felt they had the player, and then Arsenal came in and that changed. So it will all hinge on what Wolves had or have, you know, be that in writing, be it, if, you know, it might be a verbal agreement, in which case it's probably not worth anything.
Yeah.
So it will depend on what Wolves have up their sleeve. But I think we will get the player. It just might be a bit of a protracted process, unfortunately.
Yeah, and you don't want it to be protracted if you want to get him in and give him pre-season and see what he's like and see how ready he is for...
Yeah, which is the plan. You know, I don't think it's... Wolves were going to send him out on loan and had already looked into that as a possibility because they were so confident of getting him. I think with Arsenal, they're a bit more... You know, after the Martinelli experience, there's kind of an attitude of, well, let's see what we've got before we make any decisions.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's cup games, there's Europa League group stages, plenty of early season playing time for him anyway.
But so what does all that mean
for Reece
Nelson?
Good question. What's he got, a year left on his contract at Arsenal? I think he ended well. He ended his loan spell well at Feyenoord.
Yes, he did, after a difficult start.
A difficult start, and it was interesting listening to him talk. Was it him, I think, last week, talking about things like diet and stuff like that?
Yeah, he did a good interview with Art Deroche.
That's what it was, yeah.
For the Athletic.
And talking about diet and you know, it's small things that can make a difference in a player's career. And when it's as competitive as it is at youth level, I know it's difficult for these guys to avoid a cheeky Nando's, even if it might be the most overrated chicken on the fucking planet, but they love it, you know. But is it the best thing for your fitness, for your conditioning, all that kind of stuff?
And Smith Rowe, this season as well, didn't he?
And I read an interview with Martinelli recently as well. I think it might have been in 442, where he talked about learning to cook for himself, but having his own chef. And things like that, which is, you know, part and parcel of what he's doing to make sure that he's as ready as he can possibly be. But I just think maybe with Reece Nelson, I think his race was pretty much run. He should have gone on loan, not last season, the season before that, where he barely played at all. And I think he missed a really key year of development, which is probably why his loan spell at Feyenoord started as slowly as it did.
He was playing catch-up to a certain
extent. He was playing a lot of catch-up. And I just don't know if, at this point, that catch-up is sufficient to be at Arsenal. A year left, English. His stock has risen a bit in the last few months. It strikes me that probably the best thing for the club is to get a transfer fee for an academy player and for him to go somewhere where he is going to play every week, whether he's abroad or whether he's in the lower reaches of the Premier League or even in the Championship. I don't quite know, but at this point in his career, he's got to play week in, week out, and he's not going to do that at Arsenal. He could be perhaps reasonable backup for Saka or take some of the burden off Saka, but I just don't see a future. I mean, I could be wrong. You can't say definitively really about anything in football these days because players can come back and surprise you. We've seen it with Nketiah, with Elneny as well, to an extent. Mm. Like, you can't completely shut the door, but I think for his own sake, he should be looking elsewhere.
Yeah, I think so too, probably. I mean, I think the question is right. There could be a spot on that right hand side opening up. It's so funny, you know, Arsenal in the past few days have, it's been the birthday of both Nicola Pepe and Alex Lacazette. And so their Instagram account has, like, you know, put up a big picture of them and the caption has been happy birthday. And in both instances, I've sort of half thought it was going to be an announcement about them leaving the club. I think he will go and it will create a spot for somebody. But yeah, I'm not sure it should be Reece Nelson. I think he should go and play somewhere. I mean, he'll be looking at what Eddie's done this season and thinking, you know, could I do the same if I get my chance? Could I win a long-term contract? But when you look at the options we already have in wide areas, people like Martinelli, Saka, Smith Rowe, it's a very different situation to the one Eddie found himself in, competing with two, you know, strikers who are in and around 30 years old and on the way out of the club. So I think he probably will go. And one thing I would say, actually, we all know Arsenal don't sell well, and it's something that they must address. But I think in the past kind of 12 to 18 months, we have seen some better use of the loan market in terms of benefiting players, both in their development and in terms of their value. I mean, ultimately, you know, Reece going to Feyenoord, I think, has been a really good thing for him, although he started not too well. He's finished very well, and I think it will have done him some credit and hopefully attracted some interest from elsewhere. And I think there are a number of others who you could potentially say that about.
Mm. All right. Well, look, we have got to the halfway mark in this particular podcast. So what we're going to do is take a little break. We've got more of your questions and more, I don't know what else. We've just got your questions.
Mainly questions, right?
Mainly questions.
Some answers, perhaps.
You never know. We'll do our best. We'll be right back after this.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Welcome back to the Arscast Extra. This is part two of the show where we answer questions that you send to us on Twitter at GunnarBlog and at ArsBlog. Also on the ArsBlog Discord chat server, which you get access to if you are an ArsBlog member on Patreon. I'm going to go first. And given that it is the start of the transfer window, we had this one from Dazzy Pepper, who said, it's that time of the year. Dun, dun, dun. What are your predictions for transfer outlay, income, and net spend? So I'm thinking, like, what's the list of players who might leave? And I've got these here, who we might sell, and what we think we might generate from those. So I'll go from the top. We'll go through it quite quickly. Bernd Leno, I think we know he's going to go because we've got Matt Turner and Aaron Ramsdale now. So Bernd Leno's going to go. How much do you think we'll get for him? A year left on his deal.
A year left on his deal. Not very much. I think maybe, I mean, I've seen 8.5 million reported and I would be surprised if it was that much.
Wow. Honestly. Do you think he's going to go back to Germany or would he stay in England? Because that would then have an impact on the transfer fee.
The problem you've got is he's a year away from going for free and all the rewards that come with that. And I think his place in the German World Cup squad is probably gone at this point. I mean, Kevin Trapp, who was his big rival, just won the Europa League, saving the crucial penalty, and is playing very well and playing every week. I mean, he could get it back, I guess. But I think you might have a player there who's not pushing to get out. So I will say that we'll get 6 million for Bernd Leno.
6 million of your great English guineas?
Yeah, let's call him guineas, yeah.
All right. I thought we might get a little more, depending on who was interested.
Well, we might. An English club, might be wrong.
You know, I think 12 to 15 million for a player of his experience wouldn't be unreasonable, but of course it requires somebody to want to pay that. Nicolas Pepe, this is the difficult one.
I think 15 million.
15 million. I was going to say, yeah, 17. So we're thereabouts. Yep. Reece Nelson, we just talked about him, I think.
Yeah. As absurd as it sounds, I've got him more than Bernd Leno. I've got him at 7.
I would say 5. If we got 5 for Reece Nelson, we'd be doing very well. Ainsley Maitland-Niles, back from Rome.
I've got that at 7 as well.
I'm going to go for 9.
Okay.
I think maybe someone like Everton could be silly enough.
I mean, that's a loan that hasn't gone well.
Yeah. No, it didn't at all. On any level. Because, you know, without wanting to go over it all again, we probably could have used him ourselves. So you said 7. Hector Bellerin, who is...
Oh, I forgot about him.
Yeah.
Another one, a year out.
A year out.
Would like to go to Betis. Betis haven't got any money. Awkward one. I mean, all these players, that, you know, by the way, I'm not saying I think Bernd Leno's only worth 6 million quid. I think he's top goalie. I think he's worth a lot more.
Mm.
But I'm thinking, I'm burnt by summer's past. I'm trying to be realistic.
Yes, burned by burned.
What do you think on Bellerin? I think I might need your help to contextualise this.
I have a feeling that this is one of those that we will facilitate.
Yeah.
To the extent that, I guess there's a fairly big financial disparity in terms of wages between Betis and Arsenal, and also what they can afford to pay. So I think, you know, something like 3 million or whatever would be about as much as we'll get for Bellerin goes to Betis.
I'll go higher than that. I'll go 8.
8 million you think we'll get from Betis? Like, I don't know. Spanish football experts could tell me better, you know, what their financial firepower is.
Can I just say something on this? I think it's an interesting point because obviously this all sounds crap, doesn't it? Like, this all sounds like this is terrible. But I read an interesting piece about Spurs the other day, and it was talking about how this summer Spurs are prepared to, so, you know, they've had this influx of cash and can't they stay? It's all about, you know, all good news stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the big changes they're preparing to make at Spurs, according to this report, was that they are now going to let squad players leave for lower fees than they've previously demanded. And the sort of the rhetoric was like, Tottenham have learned from their previous mistakes of attempting to holding on to value for players and attempting to sell them at a predetermined price and then being stuck with players they didn't really want. And now essentially they're going to let people go below value. And it was just so interesting to read that point of view because I was like, that's what we do all the time. And I honestly don't know the merits. Like, I don't know what's better. Is it better to hold on to somebody if the bid doesn't arrive? Or is it better to cut your losses if they're not part of the future and accept what the market will give you?
Well, I think the second, really.
Yeah.
You know, we all have figures in our mind what we think a player is worth. But there are market forces that you have to deal with. And, I think it's fair to say that Arsenal need to sell better and be better at selling. But when you're trying to sell, I'm looking at Leno, Nelson, Maitland-Niles, Bellerin, Torreira, all with a year left on their deals. And that is a factor that you have to contend with, and that you're going to have to deal with. I just took a quick look at Real Betis and what they did in the transfer market last summer, and they spent a grand total of £3.15 million
on
a guy from Fiorentina. However, so far this season, they have signed Willian Jose from Real Sociedad for £7.65 million, and Luis Henrique from Fluminense for $11.34 million. So they've already coughed up about $18 million. So it suggests that they do
have... They're in Europe, right? They won the cup. Did that get them into Europe of some description?
I don't know.
Yeah. They won a cup, didn't they?
Yeah, didn't they win the Copa del Rey?
Yes.
So maybe they have a few...
I'm sticking to my eight for Bellerin. I think it might be ambitious, but then I think I've gone low on some others. So right. I think I'll end up in the right sort of ballpark. Okay. I suppose just what I'm saying is, although these all sound like terrible fees, basically none of these players are in the plans. So they've got to go.
Mm. And and the volume of players kind of adds up to...
Well, this is the thing. Even though we're predicting small numbers, it's a decent chunk if it all comes in.
Yeah, it could get you a good player. A good player. We need to get more than one, obviously.
So who's next after Hector? Is that it?
No. Lucas Torreira, who again was it looked like he was going to go to Fiorentina, and then they reneged or they changed some of the deals. I don't know if it's a negotiation with the player. They're trying to drive down the fee with Arsenal, whatever it is. But I think he said something about it last week. And that one looked like it was going to go for about 15 million, 12 to 15 million. And now we don't quite know, but...
Maybe 10, I'll say.
10 million? Okay. I will say I'm going to go with eight, okay. Something like that. Pablo Marie?
5 million? Yeah. No? You think I'm in dreamland?
No. I'm not accusing you of anything. I'm just in my own head... I'm going to say 3 million for Pablo.
You're trying to imagine someone paying 5 million for Pablo Marie.
My sense, whether it's correct or not, is that the Premier League is becoming more of its own private island when it comes to transfers. And that out there in Europe, there is money, but not pre-pandemic money. And
you're absolutely right. This is the problem Arsenal have.
Yeah.
They're trying to sell players to a continent that is basically skin. And actually, this is why there's a value, I always think, in buying English players, because when it comes to sell them, generally, there are takers at a better value.
Yeah.
Are we counting any Guendouzi money from this summer, or are we saying that's last summer's deal?
Well, it was last summer's deal, but it's this summer's money. They pay 10 million. So... 10 million plus the 1 million loan fee from last year. So that's another 10 million. So just I'll use your figures, and you've gone 15 and 6, 21, 28, 35, 45, 53, 58 plus Guendouzi's. That's 68 million incoming.
And that's without the 30 million for Saliba.
I was waiting for that one. everyone's furious.
I don't know what's going to happen there. But I'm happy with... I mean, the thing is, although those fees all sound
low,
rubbish to a certain extent to us in terms of how we value those players... If we end up with 60 million quid coming in for getting shot of a load of guys who aren't in the plans anyway, I will be happy with that.
And look, there would be a couple of players, when you think about the fact that Aubameyang is gone, Lacazette is gone, Pepe is going to go, I think there are some fairly substantial numbers coming off the wage bill as well, which might...
I think Arsenal's obligations to Aubameyang end this summer.
Yeah.
In terms of the deal they worked out with Barca. And I think, obviously, Lacazette looks like he's going to go.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that will free up some money. I mean, where were you? Were you sort of a fraction less than me?
A little bit less. Well, I went a bit bigger on the Leno thing. So I think it's more or less the same. I'll tell you mine is, I said 17, so 22, 27, 38, 41, 49, and 52 is where I ended up, and you were 58.
So we're there. I mean, the thing is, although all our guesses sound conservative, I will still be quite surprised if Arsenal bring in that much money this summer. Just because I'm not sure it's out there. And also because I've got so little faith in our selling, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, they...
We get this wrong every summer, basically, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, we do. But maybe this is the summer where they surprise us and show us that they've got some chops in this maybe. Side of things.
I don't think what we're asking for in terms of those numbers is... I think people will be shouting at us, listening about how cheap we've sold some of these players. But, you know, we're trying to be realistic.
Yeah, and also we're not businessmen. We're just two idiots doing a podcast. So,
well, that's true, yeah. That's also true.
Yeah. What about incoming?
Yeah.
So let's imagine that Yuri Tielemans and Gabriel Jesus, both of whom, by the way, have a year left on their contract.
And yes, going and they should be about, what, 5 million
3 million
each,
yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny how it works the other way around.
It's funny how it works when the player is good. That's
and also playing for an English club and being signed by another English club.
It's a transfer between English clubs and players who still are clearly a big part of the plans. Mm. You know, I don't mean to be unkind to any of that previous list, but there are different criteria here.
Yeah, yeah. So we're probably looking at something like minimum 40 for Gabriel Jesus, based on the figures that City are quoting. Maybe they do us a favor, you know, kind-hearted.
Why not? I mean, they don't need the money.
No. They can just give it away. But, you know, 40 million, and you're looking at what, 20 to 25 maybe for Tielemans? Would that be
25,
right?
25, yeah. I've got 25 written down.
So let's say on the minimum side of that, that's 60. So we've got rid of all our chaff for 68 million. We've spent 60 on these two guys.
Yeah.
Giving us a whopping 8 million to play around with. On top of whatever else we can use or that the owners will make available to the manager. Yeah. And, you know, it's fair to say that we do need more than two players because, you know, we're just getting rid of a load and the squad is small enough as it is. So we are going to have to spend a bit more. On who, in what positions, remains to be seen. But I think we probably need, would you say, another three players on top of the two?
Don't know if I'd go as far as that. Centre forward, striker. Sorry, that's the same thing.
It is.
Centre forward, centre midfield. I still think we might buy a centre back because it's something we love to do. And then maybe somebody if Pepe goes.
Well, there's the young Brazilian that we spoke about. So
yeah, but if he turns up and he's not up to the level. Then, I mean, it's hard for me to be exact about this because a lot depends on things like that. And there are things like, you know, do we loan out certain younger players or do we keep them in the squad? I think we'll spend 110 million.
Right. Okay. That's a good figure.
Yeah. I'm sort of thinking 60 million on forwards. Might be one, might be two.
Mm.
Like if we don't get Jesus, if he goes elsewhere, then a lot of the other ones we're talking about are more expensive probably even than him. Then I'm thinking Tielemans or similar, about 25 million. That takes you to about 85. And then 25 left for something else.
Right. I'm just looking at the squad. I mean, if Lacazette goes, or, you know, when Lacazette goes, and if Pepe is sold, based on what we've got in the squad right now, we have 17 outfield players. I'll just recount. So we've got seven defenders as it is. 1, 2, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. I think I just counted wrong. We need more than two players. I think we need another three to really give the squad some depth.
When you say another three, what do you mean? Do you mean five total?
I think we need five signings. And I mean, not necessarily including that young Brazilian guy in that, even though he's...
Or Matt Turner. Are you including Matt Turner?
No. No. So, I mean, as it would stand, if Lacazette and Pepe went, they're classified as forwards.
Yeah. I think if Pepe goes, he'll be replaced by a new signing. Yeah. I don't think it'll be Marquinhos. That's my opinion.
All right. So we're looking at like a total spend of 100. I'm going to say 120 total spend. 123 million, I will say, as total spend. I'm a little bit less than you on the incoming. So we've got a net spend of about 70. Is that right? Mm-hmm. Thereabouts, 60 to 70. All right.
Yeah.
That doesn't sound completely unrealistic to me.
No, so. Bear in mind, we were bidding for players in January.
Big money as well for a guy. Anything. Yeah, big money for a striker in January.
Big money for Vlahovic, yeah. We were bidding about 15, 20 million for a centre-half as well at that time.
Mm.
Schlotterbeck, who went to Dortmund. I don't think that's unrealistic at all. And also, we've got some European revenue to come.
Mm-hmm.
Fans are back in stadiums.
Sure.
Things look a bit healthier financially. I don't think it's beyond question that we'd spend that kind of money. I don't think it's beyond question that we'd spend the kind of money we spent last summer, to be honest.
Yeah.
But we shall see.
We shall see. Okay, well, look, as ever, nobody should make any wagers or bets based on our predictions on anything.
We're always wrong.
We're always completely and utterly wrong. It just is a question of by how much.
And the thing is about football, like transfers are mad. Like it is so difficult to ascribe a number to a player. Like it feels in some respects so abstract. I guess because it all comes down to what the selling club is prepared to accept. You know, a situation like Gabriel Jesus is distorted by the fact that Man City have no need to sell that player. So yeah, it's a weird old business.
Yeah. Okay. Here's a question that's sort of slightly in line with that, and it's from the Discord from Just Some Guy. Just mysterious. He says, "Do you think that Mikel Arteta is an attraction for an incoming player compared to other managers at the top of the European leagues?" I thought that
Good
was
question.
An interesting question.
Yeah, it depends who for. Like, the kind of players we were signing last summer. So, younger guys, earlier in their careers, I have no doubt that conversations with Arteta would have been a very compelling factor in their decisions. And even someone like Martin Odegaard, who was coming from Real Madrid, but who had worked with Arteta, I think he would have been a big factor in his choice. I think if you're like a established star, your prime, does he hold the same kind of sway, the same kind of allure, given that he's at the very outset of his career? Probably not, you'd have to say.
How much do you think it really matters when it comes to, in inverted commas, top clubs anyway? Because, look, I think you could say for sure that there were players who looked at Arsenal when Arsene Wenger was in charge and thought, that's a fucking club I want to go to. It's Arsenal, but it's also Wenger, and I've seen what he's done for the careers of some players and how he's brought them success and developed them and all that kind of stuff. But when you get into the realms of a top club, most top clubs have a top manager anyway. So which is the bigger draw? Is it the club itself or the manager? And it's probably more the club, I think. Maybe it goes hand in hand. If you're, you know, a top club with a top manager, it just becomes easy.
I think that the greatest kind of ace Arsenal have in their hand is London, to be honest, especially for a foreign player. Like, if you want to come to England, you want to come to London. Far more so than you want to go. I mean, you know, that will be the challenge Newcastle face. I'm sure they'll find a way of getting around it. but, you know, I think London has massive appeal to footballers. Arsenal are a big club, a historic club. They have a project that is clear and has, I think, will appeal to a certain profile of player. And I think, listen, from what we know about Mikel Arteta, we've all watched his press conferences. I imagine if you get him one-on-one in a room with somebody, I imagine he's a very, very good salesman for what Arsenal are doing.
Yeah.
But is he going to attract people on name value in the same way that I think you're absolutely right? People wanted, it was like an ambition of people to come and play for Wenger. I think, of course not. It would be kind of crazy if he did hold that kind of appeal. But then how many managers in world football truly have that? Right. When Arsene had it and Ferguson had it, I'd say it was sort of a relatively unique thing. And I think at this point in time, certainly looking through the Premier League, I can imagine someone saying, I want to play for Klopp. I want to play for Pep.
I would say that I don't know if players would be like, I want to go play for Pep, because I'd say he's a pain in the hole. I'd say he's a pain in the fucking arse in terms of what he wants. And obviously what he does is not that it's unique, but it's very specific and it's very hard work and you've got to learn. And you look at someone like Jack Grealish, who will go, I don't know, did he really, really enjoy his year? I mean, he talked about Guardiola in amazing. I saw an interview with him where he just said it's like, it's unbelievable working with him. But I'd say it's hard. And I'm not saying it should be easy, but I wonder if there's more, if you're a creative player, if you prefer that kind of a little bit more freedom in the way you're allowed to play the game, rather than having to learn by rote the positions and the movements of Pep's football chess, if you know what I mean. But look, I'm sure he is an attraction for players. On a personal level, if I was a player and I had the chance to play for Klopp or Pep, I would choose Klopp, I think.
I mean, I suppose what's interesting is looking through the league, you're like, who else has that? And actually, I mean, the one you would say maybe does is possibly Antonio Conte. I mean, you know, he certainly has an aura and a reputation. As much as we may not like it. I think with players in Italy and the Serie A, so he'll hold a lot of sway.
Sure.
But that's, you know, when you appoint an experienced manager, I guess that's part of the challenge that you face. And I'm not sure it's an obstacle. I'll put it like that. I don't think Arteta's inexperience is an obstacle to players joining. I think there's enough else that's appealing about Arsenal, the Premier League, the financial package, London, the project, club, that I still think we're in a position to land, you know.
The final point on this, before you get to ask a question, I would just say as well that players talk among themselves, and pretty much every player who is at Arsenal now will talk in glowing terms about Mikel Arteta and the work that he does and what goes on there. So I think that's part of the sell, if you like, to
that's
any
true.
Potential.
I guess it depends who you ask, though, doesn't it? If you ask Ter Gündüz.
That's what I said. I said specifically players who are at Arsenal right now, because I'm sure there are some who aren't, who won't have enjoyed their time under Mikel Arteta for one reason or the other. But that's... there's probably a reason why they're not at the club right now. So,
interesting question, though.
Yeah.
DJ Nolan on the Discord says, non-football question, who drank the most last weekend when you and the Arsenal Vision boys got together?
Elliot.
It was Elliot.
It was Elliot Smith. Elliot all the way. He is the Champions League winner of drinking his face off at the weekend, and you know,
invincible.
Look,
four nights undefeated.
The man has got some stamina. I'll give him that. Nobody could accuse him of being a lightweight. That is for sure.
Incredible effort on his part.
Yeah. I suspect he felt it this week.
I can't imagine what sort of condition he is in.
But yeah, fair play. He fucking went all in. he really did.
All or nothing. All he's doing nothing. His own DVD.
Have you got another one, or do you want me to ask?
I've got another one. This is from Sebja on the Discord. And Sebja says, morning. Do you have any unusual formations or positions for players you would like Arteta to test out during pre-season? For example, I'd like to see Saka in the left eight role. He played there very briefly against Tottenham and looked good. His talent, strength and ability to turn are sometimes wasted on the wings if we're struggling in midfield.
I think I've said that before, that I fancy Saka to develop into a player who is used more centrally than just on one wing. Because I think he's got the ability to do it. So yeah, that's one that I would have no problem with, even if, you know, obviously I think right now he is our first choice right forward, if you like. Are there any others?
Go on.
I think maybe Smith Rowe more central than left.
Interesting.
Again, another one who I think has the ability to do it, but maybe would need a bit of playing time in there. Beyond that,
I'd like to see Smith Rowe. I would like to see the Smith Rowe false nine thing. I'm one of the few, probably, right, after that Villarreal game. But it's just, it's sort of, Arteta's alluded to it as an option a few times. And so I would just like to see it in practice in pre-season and see if there's something in it. I mean, Manchester City made such a success of that style. And when you look at the kind of collection of attacking players we have, that ability for like a very mobile front line, fluid positions, interchanging, you know, we do have the potential there.
He does have good timing, doesn't he, in the box, Smith Rowe?
Good timing, yeah, good finishing. He has that sort of slight Gundogan-y instinct for popping up in the right place. So I would be curious to see that rather than it just be a kind of a notion. And I would probably also file Martinelli through the middle in that as well. You know, we've seen that under Unai Emery a few times and it looked quite impressive. And I'd be curious to go back to that and see what that opens up. I guess both of those ideas enable us to get Saka, Smith Rowe and Martinelli on the pitch in advanced positions. And I think that's something we need to kind of try and figure out a way to do if we can. I am curious about sort of the centre-backs and how we, if Saliba stays, how we integrate him. But I don't necessarily see that going to a back three simply because I'm not sure we quite have the wing backs, particularly on the right hand side. I think it would require an addition, really, to make sense of a sort of right wing back position in this team. But I do wonder if we'll see more of, kind of regardless of what happens, I'd be curious to see more of Ben White at right back sometimes. Just me.
Well, yeah, I mean, Yeah, it's an alternative to what we have right now, you know? It feels more Tomiyasu-esque, if that makes sense.
Exactly.
And if you've got the depth at centre-half where you can move Ben White, then certainly I'd be in favour of that.
I don't think we'll play with a conventional back three, but if we continue to play with kind of a right-back who's more of a kind of tucked-in third centre-half at times, then, you know, a unit of Gabriel White and one other, if Tomiyasu is not available, or, you know, has potential. But we'll see.
Mikael Broberg, who's at Broberg Mikael. I think I know what your answer to this one is going to be. He says, unpopular opinion, which I think this is definitely going to be. He said, I think Arsenal should accept a reasonable bid for Smith Rowe this summer. His fitness worries me and makes me think of Wilshire's fate. I know he's young and still developing and homegrown, but I have doubts about his future. What do you guys think?
I think, no, let's not do that.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, I understand the sort of concerns over the physicality, but what I would say is even with that and even with not starting a lot of the games, look what he produced this season. And Well, I don't think the rate at which he was scoring in the first half of the season is sustainable. You know, there was a touch of the Joe Willocks about that run at times. I still think he, when you look at what he's done in the 18 months since he burst onto the scene properly at Premier League level, he's really made a massive contribution. You know, we fought to keep him last summer. There was interest from Aston Villa. You know, if somebody knocked on our door with an absurd offer, then it's a different conversation. But the question says we should accept, we should, you know,
a reasonable offer,
a reasonable fee.
No,
I'm afraid I can't get on board with that.
No, he's done so well, and he's, you know, I think he, what we saw in the second half of the season was a player who was thrust into the limelight and thrust into first team football very quickly. You know, we saw even in that run, the season before last, he did have some injury issues, and I think he's gone through a spell where his body has really developed, and he's had issues with injuries this season, but he's not away with England. He's got some time off. He can rest, recuperate, get a good preseason under his belt. And I think the progress he made in terms of his all-round game and his contribution in front of goal is such that it would take something absolutely ludicrous for me to even think about it, and definitely not something just reasonable. So,
Yeah. I'm with you on that. Okay, what about this one? Liam Hebbs on Twitter says, "Morning, gents. What is your opinion on Arsenal rescinding season tickets if not utilised for more than 10 games, i.e. attending, selling on ticket exchange? I, for one, have been on the waiting list for 7 years and counting and welcome this. However, I know current season ticket holders who do not agree."
Is that a thing?
Yes, it is. So, as of next season, if a season ticket is not utilised for 10 fixtures, the holder will lose their right to it. And by utilising, you can sell it on the ticket exchange. I believe you can transfer it to another membership. You do not have to attend yourself, but it has to be in use.
Well, that seems reasonable. I think
isn't that completely reasonable? Yeah. I think so.
And like, I'm sure that there are going to be exceptions for people who, you know, there are going to be people who have circumstances which preclude them from going to games or whatever else. You know, there's always some kind of thing. I assume there'll be some kind of, what's the word? Consideration given to special circumstances or whatever it might be. But yeah, I mean, look, I know the AST have been very, they've worked very hard to ensure that as many tickets are available, as many seats are filled for every single game. So if it's a question of just putting it on the ticket exchange or transferring it to another member if you can't go or don't want to go and want to keep your ticket. I mean, if you don't want to go and you want to keep your ticket and you don't do any of those things, then you can't really have any complaints, can you?
I mean, who are these people with these tickets that they're just not even using for 10 games?
I wonder, is it people who've had tickets for a long time and maybe have moved away and just, you know, want to keep, yeah, they want to keep their ticket, but, you know, they can still keep their ticket. They just have to make sure that it's available, which seems perfectly fine. Assuming, of course, that the ticket exchange works as well as it should, which I don't know whether it does or it doesn't.
Yeah, it's pretty straightforward, yeah. I have to say.
Yeah.
It's pretty straightforward. I think this is a really good thing and part of, you know, I mean, there's been some really good work done on kind of the stadium and the atmosphere and more to come with renovations to the Emirates. But, you know, we need those seats filled. And this is, there are people on that season ticket waiting list, like the person asking the question, who are desperate for the opportunity to get in there. So I think if tickets aren't being used, it's only right they sort of come back onto the market.
All right. Here is one from Discord from Lowy133. He said, "How would you approach the absolute mess of fixtures that is next season?"
Does he mean the Europa League? I guess so.
I don't think he means just the Europa League. I suspect he means the great big fucking gap in the middle with, you know, the World Cup.
The big hole in the middle.
Where, you know, where we should be sitting here right now looking forward to a World Cup starting in a week's time or a couple of weeks' time. And instead, it's happening in November for all the reasons that we all know and understand. And that is going to play a big part in what happens next season. So,
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, next season's going to feel weird. I'll tell you that now.
Mm.
And it's a bit of a shame, really, because we had some pretty weird seasons during the kind of pandemic era, the behind closed doors era. All the calendars were out of sync. And it just feels like we've had a campaign where everything sort of got back to normal. And now we're about to fuck it all up again.
Yeah.
And it's needless. Well, it's not needless because it's literally too hot to play in that country in the summer. I get that. But, yeah, I don't like it. So we pause. The Premier League pauses on November the 13th after 16 rounds of games.
And I just looked up the Europa League group stage. This isn't definitive because it's on Wikipedia and any old cunt can edit things on there. But match day 6 of the group stage of the Europa League is on the 3rd of November. So they're getting the group stage. I assume it's similar for the Champions League as well. The group stages of the European competitions will be completed before the World Cup takes place.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that's really interesting about this scheduling is that the season starts really early. So we play, the opening weekend is August the 6th.
Nottingham Forest away on Friday night. Robin of Sherwood.
And one thing to bear in mind, obviously one of the things Arsenal suffered from was, you know, we didn't have our business done at the start of the season. And the transfer deadline is not till the 1st of September. So, you know, we could have played a good few games by then again. I mean, if you ask me, that's all a nonsense as well. The deadline should be before the season starts. It's mental that it's not. But anyway.
Yeah.
So how do we deal with the chaos? I mean, honestly, I haven't got a clue. I mean, we're going to have a lot of players at the World Cup as well. That's another interesting thing. And one, I guess, a sign of improved recruitment and improved progress. I feel like there've been a few international tournaments yesterday where you've been scratching around for an Arsenal player to watch. I don't think that's going to be the case at the World Cup this year. There's going to be loads. I think double figures, probably.
Wow.
So I know that Arsenal, as happy as they are to be back in Europe, are looking at the schedule for next season with all these factors contributing and thinking that it looks challenging physically. And who knows, maybe that is, again, why they're making a change on the kind of physio side, because they see this is a very different challenge that will require a different approach.
It's interesting as well, because you assume naturally that when a player finishes an international tournament, they need a holiday, they need some time off or what have you. But given that this is in the middle of the season, it's just a, look, it's not as simple as this, but it's a change of scenery rather than sort of more on the end of a season, if you like, which requires them to get some rest. But yeah.
The World Cup final is December 18th, right? And if a player takes part in that, they will have 8 days between that and the resumption of the Premier League.
So the Premier League starts again on what, the 26th of December?
Yes, 26th, Boxing Day.
So it's gone from...
It's gone from... 13th of November to December 26th. It's gone for... well, yeah, 5 weeks, something like that.
That's fucking nuts.
It is quite mad. I mean, what sort of state these players will be in come May, I do not know.
And, like, it's not as if... I mean, there's a load of Nations League and World Cup qualifiers still going on.
Yeah,
so, like, some of the players...
England have got, like...
4 games.
Yeah. It's mad.
And then they'll be back for pre-season, what, at the start of July? Because the first game, when is the game in? Is the Baltimore game the first game?
No, they come back. No, it's not. I think they go to Nuremberg.
Right. But it's the 16th of July. So they might get 2 or 3 weeks off. That's all. And then they're going into a season with a World Cup and everything else. And the other challenge, I think, is you know, what do you do with the players who aren't at the World Cup? Who are basically off for 5 weeks. And you could say, well, that's good because they can rest and they can shake off any injuries. But you want to be playing. You've got to, you know, part, what is it they call it? The conditioning side of things or whatever, that like some players are need to play regularly to keep their fitness levels high. Periodization, that's the thing.
And also, how does that, you know, I think there was a degree to which Arsenal, I'd love to sit down and have a chat with Arsenal about how they managed Gabriel Martinelli across this season, because it's, when you look back at his involvement in games, I feel like there was a sort of strategic element to the way and the times at which he was used. So he was not used very much in the start of the season. And then as, of course, the Aubameyang thing exacerbated this, but as it came to the point where Pepe and Aubameyang were preparing to go away to AFCON, he began to ramp up his minutes. And I wonder how much of that was deliberate, and will we see a similar things this season, where players are almost prepared for that moment on Boxing Day when the guys from the World Cup are all still going to be knackered and they need to be ready to come into the team. It's a whole other aspect to the squad management, isn't it?
And it's one, well, I mean, the only thing I would say is that no manager, you know, you could talk about, let's say, Mikel Arteta being an inexperienced manager, but no manager will have had to deal with this situation before. So everyone is kind of dealing with the same issue. And some will do it better than others, but you got to keep players match fit, match sharp. All of that kind of stuff is really, really important. So, and then inevitably there would be some injuries. You know, it's just, I don't know. It's going to be very, very interesting. And I think it will play a significant part in the second half of next season. I think we'll see some strange stuff across European leagues and the Premier League, because it will have an impact on player fitness, their injuries, all that kind of stuff. I think it will have an impact, so.
It's going to be interesting.
It sure is. It sure is. Here's one. This is for you. I don't have any of this, but I feel like this one might apply to you. He said, did you guys have any wagers on with your mates pre-season? I was at a barbecue last summer, and after a few beers, me and my Everton supporting friend put a £20 bet on who would score more Premier League goals this season, Aubameyang or Dominic Calvert-Lewin. Aubameyang was leading the way for the whole season despite leaving in January, but a goal off Calvert-Lewin's nipple ended up costing me the bet. Worst bet of all time. Do you have anything like that going on?
I didn't. No. I had a few. I'm involved in a few fantasy football leagues where there was a wager involved. Did you manage to lose this season, by the way?
No.
The Arsenal League.
Somehow I ended up with 400 points. But, well, wow. I mean, I tell you, basically what I did for the first couple of weeks was transfer in and out a load of injured players into my team at all times.
Yeah.
So that way I wouldn't get any points. But then I just gave up, you know? I gave up, and I can't find my fantasy football login.
But somehow you accidentally managed to accumulate some points.
400 points. I think by virtue of just not looking at my team for 6 months, and some of the injured players got uninjured and came back and played and shit like that. So,
but no big wages, really. No. Fortunately, I didn't sort of, you know, have a bet with any Spurs fans about if we'd finish above them. That would have been catastrophic.
That would not have been good. That would not have been good. Error 404, who's at Generic Gooner, says, when are you guys going to play FIFA again? Is it called FIFA now anymore, or is it?
I don't know. Pro Evolution Soccer's dead, isn't it? That's become something else.
That's gone, and FIFA is changing to, I don't know, FIFA game.
Oh, it is changing, isn't it? Because they
EA Sports FC. It's in the game.
Yeah.
Maybe we should have a game during the summer.
Maybe when we've got a couple of signings in the bag. And
but they won't. They won't be on. We'll have to use the FIFA 22, whatever
you're
it is.
Right.
You know.
You're right. We'll have to use FIFA 22, but we'll do it.
We'll do it at some point during the summer. Yeah, we'll do it one evening. And
that's a guarantee. Yeah. There's not enough football to distract us. So yeah, we'll definitely do it.
Yeah, we'll do that at some point. All right. I think we should leave it there for this one. We've got through our first, not quite interlull, but off-season Arsecast Extra. So thank you as always for listening to the show. Really appreciate it. Thanks for downloading and sharing and for your reviews and all that kind of stuff. We'll have a regular one on Friday. We'll do something on Patreon midweek for you as well, hopefully. But for now, we'll catch you on the next one.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads. Ba 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 ba